This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
This is The Joe Gaither Show on BamaCentral.com.
Good morning, Tuscaloosa, Internet World, West Alabama. How are we doing today on this Friday? It is the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central, BamaCentral.com. Hope you guys are doing well on this Friday. We are not live in the Derrick Daniels State Farm Studios today. Well, Mason is. Mason's still sitting in the Derrick Daniels State Farm Studios. We're going to have a great time with you guys today on all your platforms, the Bama Central YouTube channel, the Bama Central Facebook page, the Joe Gaither Show Facebook page, everywhere that you can get the Joe Gaither Show on Apple Podcasts, Amazon, Spotify. Going to have a lot of fun today talking about basketball, Alabama basketball. We're going to talk a little bit about Sadarian Morgan's recruitment. As Mason Woods wrote on BamaCentral.com yesterday, he updated his announcement date. And then we're also going to talk about the trial that is going on in Tuscaloosa right now. Michael Davis is up on the stand for capital murder. This trial relates to Darius Miles. Darius Miles' trial will be coming later. Former Alabama basketball players Brandon Miller, Jaden Bradley were on the stand this week, on the witness stand this week. And so we're just going to kind of talk about what's going on with that trial as well. As always, we invite you to jump in on the comment section at Joe Gaither 6, at Bama Central, at MA Woods _, or leave us a voicemail 205-462-7340, extension 800. Dax texted me yesterday, Mason's asking about if you could leave a schedule voicemail going through wins and losses way too early schedule prediction. I unfortunately did not get back to Dax yesterday, just a busy day. Dax, when you hear this, I'm going to text you when we finish. But yes, I would love that voicemail of the Alabama schedule. Absolutely, I would.
Give us some hot takes, too, that we can really, you know, get into.
Absolutely. So with all that and the roadmap ahead of us, Mason Woods, good morning. How are we doing?
I'm doing good this morning, doing good. You know, a little bit of a different setup sitting here in the captain chair in the Derrick Daniels studio. It feels nice. You know, yeah, you can see I've got a different microphone today, so I'm struggling a little bit with not hearing myself in my ears like I usually do, but we're working through it. Had a good day yesterday. You mentioned Sadarian Morgan did officially update that commitment date. Going to be July 2nd, the number one overall player in the state of Alabama, 6'4", 210-pound wide receiver. You know, I don't want to put too many expectations on him or anything like that, but, like, you look at the guy, you immediately see Julio Jones. He looks body type very similar, you know, moves very similar, like super fluid in his movement, extremely. You can tell he's, you know, flexible and things like that. He moves around well, has a super wide catch radius. This is a guy that is very, very impressive as a prospect. You know, let's see, top six schools: Alabama, Auburn, Colorado, Georgia, Florida, and Clemson. So, you know, picking between some of the best programs in the nation, you know, I imagine Colorado's maybe getting there with a juicy NIL deal. Who knows? But yeah, this is just he's an electrifying prospect. If you have not watched him, excuse me, take some time out of your day to go check out his highlight tape. You will see exactly what I'm talking about when I say Julio Jones. Very strong hands. Again, like I said, really wide catch radius. He's able to haul in contested catches, but he's also able to kind of operate in the open field. He's got good footwork, really shifty. Let's see. He's got his stats. He's from Alexander City, plays for Benjamin Russell. His stats are absurd. He's got 2 years of varsity football, 106 passes, 1,700 yards, and 18 touchdowns. So you know he is very legit. Also plays basketball and suits up in track and field. Really good in the high jump. I think he had a personal record of 6'8" in the high jump. And then in basketball, he averaged a double-double. So the kid is just a freak athlete. I think he is going to be spectacular anywhere he goes. Hopefully it is Alabama.
Sounds like a guy from Chattanooga that I grew up watching, Ardarius Bowman, a little bit. Ardarius Bowman played at Georgia. No, he played at Oklahoma State. His brother, Brandon, played at Georgia. But Ardarius Bowman was at from Chattanooga, who was probably 5-6 years older than me. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. He's 39. So I watched him play high school at Notre Dame High School, local in Chattanooga. He goes to Oklahoma State, gets in trouble, North Carolina, that sort of thing. 6'3", 215. So Sedarian's even bigger. I saw this guy, Ardarius Bowman, high jump 7 feet. And I saw him play basketball and like with my own eyes. And just an athlete like that. Oh, my gosh. So you think that, this is somebody who's not paying attention that much, just getting the major recruiting updates. You think Alabama's in a good position for Mr. Sedarian Morgan? Because when I thought Ardarius Bowman, we got to have that kind of guy.
I mean, it certainly seems like from everything I've seen, you know, from the folks who are a little bit more connected than I am, you know, the people who maybe been doing it a little bit longer, they get the folks to get back with them a little more consistently. It seems like a lot of signs seem to point that he really enjoyed Alabama. I think he was here for A Day. I want to say he was also here for Junior Day in February. So he's been here a couple times. He's got an official visit at the end of this month. Going to be here with the giant crop of guys that are going to be here on May 30th. I think they're obviously putting a lot of resources into trying to get him, but I also think he really likes it.
Now, who is it? Is it it's Zion Gibson, isn't it? Zion Gibson who's doing the recruiting for everybody.
Yes. Yeah, if you follow him on Twitter, you see it just about every day. He's in people's replies. He's in, you know, comment sections of things just with the little elephant emoji, the eyes, you know. I think it was Tuscaloosa News that put that story out this week. I want to say I read it from them. Maybe it was a few people that covered it. He is constantly messaging other recruits and things, just kind of, you know, pushing the envelope on them, really making them kind of, you know, get to their decision a little quicker, maybe picking Alabama.
Yeah. Apparently, with Crowell and Sedarian Morgan, with both these guys moving their recruitment dates, just two and two together, my stupid tea leaves think, oh, that means Alabama, because apparently Gibson's been telling these guys, move your recruitments up, move your dates up, and go ahead and like get on board, guys. Come on, what do you want?
I think I saw his like direct the direct quote from Zion Gibson was just, what are you waiting for? And it's a great point, because what are some of these guys waiting for? If you know. And obviously, it's still early. They still have one of the year of high school football ahead of them. Most of these guys. But yeah, if you know, you know. Go ahead and lock that decision in, and go ahead and, you know, take that off of your plate. Something you don't have to really worry about anymore for the last year of high school football, where you can just focus on getting better before you go to off to college.
I'll tell you what, they're waiting on Mason. They're waiting on the next school to top the last school.
Yep.
Hey, coach. School X offered me my family home travel every weekend. Can you match? Just.
Yeah, very likely something like that. Like you said, Xavier Crowell, Sedarian Morgan, two other guys as well. Who was it last week that moved their dates up? Of course, my computer wants to freeze up now. Brandon Arrington, that was the other one. That was the other prospect that moved his date up. Going to be July 5th for him. So, you know, three guys that are leaning towards Alabama, it seems like.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun. You guys can follow the recruiting updates from Mason Woods at MAWoods_ and at BamaCentral.com. Obviously, Missouri on Missouri Tigers and Vanderbilt Commodores and Boston College in our family of networks. So Mason Woods covering all kinds of recruiting action for four different programs on four different tiers, really.
Honestly, it really is, because Missouri is as much success as they've had in like the regular season and things like that. They don't really recruit overly well. They're kind of really scraping the bottom of the barrel in the SEC for recruits. And Vanderbilt is honestly kind of in a better spot than they are for this 2026 class. You know, they just landed probably the best recruit they've had in a long time, Caden Harris, 4-star cornerback. And then Boston College, kind of in a similar position where, like, they take a lot of guys that nobody necessarily is also after, a lot of local guys from that New England area. But then now that they've started to get a little bit of juice about them, they're, you know, casting their net a lot wider than they previously have been. You know, and they've got coaches traveling to Louisiana, coaches down in Florida, coaches going across to California to visit with recruits, like all across the country. So, you know, they're starting to pick things up a little bit. And just by sheer volume, they have put together a very impressive 26 class already.
So let's shift gears a little bit, Mason, as the recruiting gets hotter over the summer, and it absolutely will. But I want to shift gears because yesterday there was a lot of news for Alabama basketball. Obviously we will get to the Darius Miles, Michael Davis stuff. Probably save that to the end because people will or will not want to listen to it. So that's just up to them at that point. What everybody might be interested in is St. John's and Alabama's basketball game actually scheduled this year with St. John's. The Crimson Tide last year was in preliminary talks. Obviously, it never really got off the ground. There was never a date for it. It never got to the finish line. But now we did. The Crimson Tide and the St. John's Red Storm will be meeting on November 8th. November 8th in Madison Square Garden. Now, first, when the announcement comes, okay, Alabama and St. John's have agreed to a matchup, I'm thinking, oh, excellent. I cannot wait. But how are they going to do this to us, Mason? Look up November 8th. Isn't that a Saturday? It's a Saturday.
Oh, I know. Yes, yes, yes.
So how the hell am I supposed to be in Bryant-Denny Stadium and Madison Square Garden at the same time? I'm excited.
You gotta take that Kirk Herbstreit. You know, get the two private flights back and forth. We're gonna have to figure. You know, there's got to be some big NIL booster that we can get in contact with. That maybe put you on a private plane.
I'm saying, what? Come on, guys. You're gonna.
It is painful.
That's can we do it the week? I know a week earlier. College basketball probably hasn't started yet because it starts on like the 15th, the 8th, I guess. Mm-hmm. Can we do it on the Saturday, the next Saturday, the Eastern Illinois Saturday, right?
Please.
Like,
this one's gonna be tough.
It makes it tough for the Gumps who want to be supporting both programs. It makes it really tough for people who see a marquee road matchup and think, "Oh, I want to go to I've never been to Madison Square Garden. I would
the Mecca."
Yeah, I would do some not nice things to go to go and get a good seat in Madison Square Garden. We'll just say that. We've talked about it, Mason. Brands on this team, on this program, how much that matters to me. Madison Square Garden, you know,
goodness gracious. Yeah.
New York, New York. Of course, I want to go see it. So I left yesterday starting on such a high. Excellent. You're going to get St. John's. They're coming back to Birmingham the next year. Awesome little set for us. And then it's on the same day of the LSU game.
Yeah. Yep. Going to, and you know, not an LSU matchup that you were going to be able to take your eyes off of either, because I think it's going to be a big time, very likely a top 10 matchup, you know, top 15, top 20 matchup. I would much rather have this game, like you said, on that Eastern Illinois weekend, when all respect to Eastern Illinois, that's a game you can maybe take your eyes off a little bit. you got to be locked in for the LSU game. That's a, you know, obviously big rivalry, but also LSU, I think, is going to be a good team this year.
So let's further this conversation past just complaining and look at the Alabama non-conference schedule.
Because what do you think?
What
do you think Muhammad Diabate's thinking? He's probably mad. I mean, he would have gotten a homecoming game. He would have gotten to go see all his family. Now he gets none of this.
Grass
ain't always greener.
He's weeping in his NIL money.
Yeah, he's wiping his tears with $100 bills. He's probably doing okay.
Yeah, absolutely. We ended the year, the basketball season, in the Elite Eight, losing to Duke. And Nate Oates basically, in conversations afterwards, basically says, okay, I think we might need to reevaluate the non-conference schedule. Maybe we scheduled too tough. Who's the heck's doing his reevaluation? Who's doing his reevaluation that comes up with at St. John's, Purdue, Arizona in Birmingham, Illinois in Chicago, North Dakota, Yale at home, three games in the Players Era Festival, probably Duke or North Carolina in the ACC-SEC Challenge. Who did his evaluation?
Yeah, I'm not really sure that he that sentiment stayed through here. I think he maybe threw that out there as some kind of, oh, I need something to maybe throw a little bit of blame on, and then just went right back to his old ways of, yeah, no, we're sticking with the old, we're sticking with what we've been doing. Because,
look,
I mean, you know, obviously this year did not end exactly the way Alabama fans wanted, did not end exactly the way Nate Oates wanted it to. But you were right there. And you were right there because you played this incredibly tough schedule, because you were battle-tested, because you were ready for the tournament. So I don't think you change anything. You know, we talked about it a little bit when this kind of was first making its rounds of maybe, you know, you don't completely shift your methodology here. Just one or two games, you maybe give them an extra break here and there. And I still think maybe you should do that, but I'm not going to be upset about just kind of sticking with part, you know, sticking with the path here and continuing to schedule these very hard non-conference games, because they do make you ready for the tournament, because these are the kind of teams you'll be playing.
I just think it's, I don't know if irony is the right word, but just a hilarious concept of, oh, I'm going to schedule probably a little softer next year. And then I mean, instead of scheduling softer, it's like ramp to level 10.
It's like, once again, the meme of like, we're all trying to find the guy who did this. It's Nate Oates being like, how did, you know, maybe we need to, we need an easier schedule next year. You made the schedule. Like, yeah. You know, maybe he wants to. I don't know. I have to think that I truly don't know. I really don't. Do you think are these schools, you know, are the other, these other schools contacting him and being like, hey, we really want to get this set up? Maybe, I mean, maybe they're the ones that are kind of pushing it a little bit, and he's kind of, oh, yeah, no, that'd be good. I don't know.
No, I think it's too tempting for him. Like,
you're probably right.
It's just speculation. It's just
too enticing.
Exactly. So, like, if you're listening to this, I just think this is speculation and my feel on it. I think that the coaching staff gets into the schedule and they're like, yeah, we want to have, you know, what's the non-conference, 13, 14, something like that, games. Okay, we want to have five really, really hard games. We want to have, you know, three or four, you know, cake warm-up games and then the rest in the middle. And I just think that it just – I think when it becomes, hey, you can go play in MSG, yeah, we're doing it.
Like, sure.
And it's like, oh, you can play Purdue again. Yeah, we're doing it. We want that. We want that. We want that smoke. We can play Arizona. Yeah. And I think that by the time – now, I'm not saying that he's unaware. That's not accurate. But by the time that he said yes to all these programs, it's like, shoot, our schedule looks like I would do the same. I would struggle with the temptation as well, because why would you? I wouldn't.
I'm not going to tell St. John's no.
Right, right. Tell your kids we can't go to New York City to start the year. And instead welcome Western Tech, Carolina U, and win by 60 in Tuscaloosa in front of 1,500 people.
Sure.
No.
Do you think that this this scheduling ideology that he has carries any bit of, you know, points with recruits, as far as like, hey, you come to Alabama, we can guarantee you're going to be playing the best of the best in college basketball, and you can put out good tape to get to the NBA, a lot of, you know, on that same track. Do you think that really has any effect there? Because I don't know. I mean, I don't really know how much these recruits are paying attention to scheduling, but I would imagine that's a good pitch.
I think yes, but different. It's not, hey, you can play against the best. I think it's, hey, you can play on national TV. You can play, yeah. We're going to have your game, you know.
I mean, yeah, you're going to be an MSG, you know.
That's right. When you're playing the Players Era Festival, when you're playing the SEC-ACC Challenge, you come to Alabama because Alabama's getting matched with Duke or North Carolina next year. I mean, if they're not matched with Carolina or Duke next year, ESPN – you've severely dropped the ball. Sorry. Like, you stick Alabama with Duke and Auburn with Carolina, and you just roll on by. It's no problem. Like, easy peasy. Don't complicate it, guys. But I think the pitch is a national stage that Nate Oates has built the Crimson Tide program. I think at first it was, hey, we have to play these games to get on TV. You know, you got to go play. You know, obviously, Alabama's been on TV for the last 10 years, so it's not just Nate
Oates
in the last minute. But stretching the concept further, like, hey, we want to really lean into these huge games where Alabama's on TV, you know, and you get a chance. Like LeBaron, I know you're going to get into LeBaron Filon with all things Bama, so I don't really want to get into him specifically and his draft decision really right here. But the point here is right in front of my face. You are working your way into the year, and LeBaron is, oh, this freshman's really nice. And then you go to Purdue, and LeBaron Filon is the only one who shows up and has a good game, and boom, draft talk, draft boards, draft stuff, And it, we've been thinking about him, but now he goes to Purdue, Mackey Fieldhouse, Mackey Arena, and performs. I think that when LeBaron's decision gets played out, it will turn into a recruiting pitch. Look at all these tough places we play. Look at the stage we put LeBaron on. Look at the stage we put Josh Primo. You know, name your NBA draft pick on. And so I think really it's about prep. It's about gaming the NCAA tournament system. Honestly, which is fine. Like,
dude, yeah, I mean,
take me to Selection Sunday, not sweating, please. So game the system.
Yes.
That's what some of my friends haven't quite understood the last couple of years when Alabama's been losing some of these non-conference games. And it's like, yeah, but you've also been winning a lot of these non-conference games, and the committee knows that you're at least a 5 seed and you're not on the bubble.
Yeah, that's an extremely valuable place to be.
So like, you start every year with getting into the NCAA tournament, you know, and so how you do that? Well, by scheduling your butt off. And ipso facto, it does get you prepared for the SEC tournament, and it also puts your players on a national stage to get themselves scouted.
Yeah. These are all positives.
Factors were part of the temptation for Coach Oates of like, oh, St. John's? Yeah. Arizona? Yeah. I mean, another. We just want to keep putting our guys on big stages. Up Purdue? Yep. Great. Yale, of course, we'll bring Yale in just because it's been a fun name in the state of Alabama. Like, he's only doing that to dig at Bruce Pearl.
1,000%. And it's going to be disastrous if Alabama loses, but really, really nice if they win.
He's probably doing that for Jordan Bruner as well.
Yeah.
Jordan Bruner comes in and watches both his old clubs play together. But I just think it's really fun. Like, personally, I love it. As an Alabama basketball supporter, I love it because, you know, what it's the old to me, Mason. What flashes in my head is Arnold Schwarzenegger in Predator. You're at the very end of the movie, right? So Predator's been killing all his friends, but Schwarzenegger, like, the odds are against him. He comes out, I'm right here. Kill me now. Bring it on. You know, just, I'm right here. And ultimately, Schwarzenegger, spoiler alert, from what was it, 1983, 4, 5.
Too soon.
Yeah, exactly. He wins, walks out, and the underdog says, bring it, you know. I just, every time I see another name on the schedule, I just think, I'm right here. Kill me now.
Yeah, I love it. I hope that it does not. I hope that he does not change it. Because, like you said, even a really high quality good loss is still better than a crappy terrible win.
Yeah, I do not give a rip about a 50-point win over Western Tech U.
That's not even taken into account when they come to seeding or anything. But if you have a close loss to a Duke, you know, or something like that, oh yeah, this is pretty good. This team is right up there with them.
So it's going
Duke's
going
to be so good next year.
I haven't looked at their recruiting. How are they replacing all their juice?
As I understand, they are doing a lot of the same and spending a lot of money.
I think, what did I see, 25 million on the roster?
Yeah, I think so. That's something like that. That was the number I saw either this week or last week.
We love football and basketball, but come on. Would you rather Alabama just pick one and load up the money on one sport or the other?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Just because, look at Villanova. They haven't got a
football program.
Duke has a football program, but they don't give a rip about it.
Sure.
Like, these programs that are,
I guess the better question is, you know, if Alabama were to, say, divert all of their funds to football, would they still be on the same level as the Oregons and Ohio States and you know, the Michigans of the world, or would they still be at a disadvantage?
I think you'd probably still be at a disadvantage slightly.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, I think you would. So maybe basketball would be your better chance there. You know, I imagine you could scrape together something similar to what Villanova's getting if you put all of your money there. Maybe not. Maybe you're not touching BYU, but, you know, hey, in a single game elimination tournament, anything can happen.
What do you think this Alabama fan base does if Greg Byrne comes out next week and says, guys, sports are getting too expensive. We're all in on basketball.
We're cutting the football program. Oh. There'd be riots in the streets.
Oh.
People, there'd be an angry mob outside of Malmore.
Massive crime in Tuscaloosa. I don't want to speculate further, but massive crime in Tuscaloosa. If that happened,
bad things would happen.
I can assure you that will never happen.
The fans would overtake Bryant Denny.
But this is really what, I mean, obviously we're being silly, but this is really what I think, going back to yesterday's conversation just a little bit, what I think Nick Saban's heart has been this entire time, not for the football program, but for, and you can say, Joe, you're just drinking the Saban Kool-Aid, but for the volleyball program, the women's tennis program, the men's tennis program. I mean, just name your ancillary sport. Sure. I don't care. Your favorite ancillary sport. I think that that's what Nick Saban is trying to save with this businessman from Texas and with this partnership or this commission from President Trump. I mean, he was the last handful of years at Alabama. If we keep going the way we're going, we're going to end up cutting sports. And when you end up cutting sports, you cut opportunities, you cut scholarships, you cut, chances for kids to get education. So
I think people view Saban as like this old school guy. It's like, oh, he's just trying to protect the system. It's like they fail to remember that a lot of these kind of old school thinkers are the ones who are so bought into the just like collegiate athletics as a whole, you know, the prestige of being a college athlete, not just a football player, not just a basketball player, but all of college, like they love that stuff. I think that's kind of getting lost in the mix here, especially with Saban.
Yes, yes, yes. You get so many people, oh, you're just trying to keep the system. It is what it is. If you keep the current system what it is, like we talked about it yesterday, the balance of powers with the agents and players. If he just doesn't do anything, like it doesn't make sense. The argument, you got Mike Florio going on, oh, you're just trying to protect the system that you made a lot of money on. Oh, da, da, da. Oh sure, Coach Abin, you made a lot of money on it. Great. That doesn't make sense to me because right now, I mean, yes, the coaches are still making a lot of money. Yeah, great. But the player, it's free. It's as free market of a system as you can get, almost to the point of, I mean, yeah, to a point of negligence, to a point of hurting the sport. I'm not going to sit here and say that everything that Nick Saban does is perfect, but I think that his motivation here with this presidential commission is for the betterment of the sport, for the health of college athletics as a whole. I don't think Coach Saban wants to see a Super League in football. And I don't think Coach Saban wants to see the women's tennis program get disbanded because of revenue sharing. That's kind of what's going on. I mean, this house versus NCAA, the revenue sharing, you're going to have to distribute the funds. I don't think Coach Saban wants to see his colleague on, you know, pick your whatever ancillary sport, get fired, that assistant coach, lose their job, that sort of thing. I think that's really where his motivation is, keeping all, 21, 22 sports at Alabama in place and, you know, as an option for people to further themselves.
I agree. And you mentioned, coaches, like obviously football coaches, especially basketball coaches too, to an extent, but mainly the football coaches making so much money, as much money as they do. But like, and this is, you know, a bit of a cherry picked example, but Sharon Moore, Michigan, making about $6 million a year. Bryce Underwood is making right at $3 million a year, almost like 2.7 or something. So we are not that far away from a situation where a player could be making a larger salary than their coach. And that's not good. That's just not where he should be.
Yes. This messed up. What are you talking about? You hear stories in pro sports. Oh, player X is making more than their coach, and tells coach to screw off. Like, and you want to talk about loyalty to the brand Alabama, loyalty to your school, whatever school you like. You give Bryce Underwood more money than Sherrone Moore, he's going to say, I don't care what play you call, coach, I'm calling this play.
Yeah, but you know how hard it would be to respect a coach if he made less money than you? Are you kidding me? Especially if you're an 18, 19-year-old kid? No, come on. That's ridiculous.
Coach, you want to tell me what to do? You want to tell me what to do? I'm just going to go in the portal with my millions of dollars and go find another school to pay me more money than your salary.
Oh, man.
It's disgusting.
Please fix it, Saban. Please.
Right. You're past the point of, we just got to make sure everybody gets – like, you're past the point of the kids are getting taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the pendulum has swung back. I'm sorry. So, I don't know if we did a great job yesterday addressing the Saban stuff, but I think that ultimately – I think the way Coach Saban operates, he's going to put together, he and this businessman from Texas are going to put together a very thorough commission, a very thorough report. It's not going to be one sentence, hey, just send Oregon back to the Pac-12. Like, it's going to be deeper than that. And so whatever he ends up coming up with, if it can get implemented, I think would be a positive.
Yeah, I'm going to, as I have for the last 15 or so years, continue to put my faith into Nick Saban and trust that he's going to do the best for the situation presented to him, as he has. So I truly think he does have the best interest of the sport in mind, and he will do whatever he can to, quell any of these issues.
All right, Mason, I don't have much more on scheduling or on kind of the way this conversation turned. I'm ready to get into a little more serious unless you want to keep going on or have another thought.
No, I think maybe it's time to get into the nitty gritty here.
Let's tell everybody about War and Tire, and then we will go into court.
So my name is Russ Warren, and I'm one of the owners here at War and Tire. We started in 1961. My granddad on University Boulevard. So we've been kind of a staple here in the Tuscaloosa and the University of Alabama community since then, and so thankful to be in the third generation. And we have two locations now in Tuscaloosa. We're right here at the 15th Street location right now, where we just do tires, brakes, and alignments mostly here. Our university location does oil changes, engine work, air conditioning work, front end work, the whole nine yards. And so any of our two locations, you can come check us out.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
And we're back here on the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central, BamaCentral.com. You guys are watching us on the Bama Central YouTube channel, Facebook page, on my own social media machines at Joe Gaither 6, or listening to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Amazon. We're with Mason Woods. We've been talking some Alabama basketball. We've been talking a little bit about, the landscape of college athletics, as we often do. Mason, but we need to go back in time a little bit. 2 years ago, we had a huge scandal here in Tuscaloosa. Mr. Mia Harris was killed on the strip in a shootout between several people. And obviously, the reason we're talking about it is the Alabama basketball involvement, Darius Miles still being in custody. Today, Darius Miles' counterpart, well, really this whole week, Darius Miles' counterpart, Michael Davis, the gunman, has been on trial for his capital murder case. It's now these two young men have been incarcerated for 2 years now. They have both been held without bonds. That's a different discussion here, but certainly one worth having at a different date. But they've both been held without bond for 2 years, and now Michael Davis is on basically on trial. You've got Jaden Bradley. You've got Brandon Miller. You've got Cedric Johnson. You've got Cedric Johnson's Jamia Harris is the girlfriend. You've got Jamia Harris's friend who testified.
Cousin.
Yes. And you got Darius Miles' girlfriend, Skylar Essex, I believe, has testified. Mm-hmm. So you've got a lot of testimony going on in the Tuscaloosa courthouse over the week. And Mason, I guess I'll just open up by just saying that it just takes you first and foremost. It's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. Always. Yeah. I mean, it was 2 years ago. It is today. The tragedy centers around Jamia Harris, and permeates to Jamia's son, and then permeates into all the other lives that have been affected by this hour and a half of altercations or so.
Yeah.
But with that said, this the reporting from Tuscaloosa, from Tuscaloosa Patch, from AL.com. I'm a really big fan, Ryan Phillips, and of Stephen Dethridge. Stephen is on vacation right now, so Ryan is really shouldering the load in Tuscaloosa, covering this case, and he's been all over it really since the jump. And Ryan's initial reporting in 22, as the case kind of took off, seems like it's bearing out in court. And so I'm really aggravated, Mason. I'm really aggravated because it just seems like a lot of things have been a lot of details have just been glossed over, twisted, have been ignored. To get to the point where Michael Davis and Darius Miles are incarcerated, I definitely think that they are not without blame. Sure. But I think the story is much further than just Davis and Miles. We're shooting into the sheet.
I think there's a lot more than just two people to blame for this. Is really the best way that I think I can put it. I guess the first thing before we really get into the exact details and anything, it's absolutely ridiculous that it's taken this long for any of this to happen. Those two men have sat in jail for 2 years now without any idea when they were going to be getting out, without any idea when they were going to be tried for what has happened, what they were charged with. Fair and speedy trial, my rear end, that is ridiculous. Whether they are guilty or not, that is absolutely abhorrent. You should not just be held in jail without bond for that long. Absolutely ridiculous. The city of Tuscaloosa, the state of Alabama, that's absurd. That should never happen with anyone. Secondly, massive shout out to Tuscaloosa Patch, because I was reading through all of Ryan's coverage over this week. The man, like you said, has been as on top of it as anybody could be, providing really, really, really good details on what's happening, moment to moment in the courtroom, giving you a lot of descriptive, good descriptions on the video that's being presented in court, the evidence is being presented in court, what the testimonies are and things like that. So just a massive shout out to him, because he has kept me given me the ability to kind of read up on this more so than I would have.
Absolutely. So what do we want to start with?
Yeah.
What in the world do you want? Because I'm coming from this case. I'm coming into this story basically remembering all of Ryan's reporting after the incident through 2022, and seeing surveillance videos on myself. I'm coming from this that we're going to find out that these two young men, Michael Davis and Darius Miles, are going to get off on self-defense. Now, my friends, before you jump in here, Mason, a lot of my friends end up, "Oh, Joe, you're just being a Bama homer." Of course you would say that about Alabama basketball player. I understand that criticism, definitely. I think that, I understand that criticism. But looking at the facts that the Cedric Johnson crew has a checkered past and checkered continuance post 2022. We'll say that. I don't want to paint them as horrible guys, but they do have criminal records that have nefarious, you know, actions. So they're in Tuscaloosa to sell drugs for the weekend. All right, you're slinging weed, whatever, bro. But like,
whatever.
What are we doing here? Getting violent? Like, that's the point that just makes me just unbelievable. Davis and Miles, like if you remember Darius Miles, he was a goof. He was a goofball all the time. He was not in a bad way, but in a, I just want to have fun. I'm here to
make
the team happy. He was a good player. He was a decent player, but it was much more
great locker room guy.
Yes, yes. And so I can see it now. He's just cutting up in front of this man's girlfriend. He's just cutting up. They won by 40. He's just cutting up. And wrong eyes get cut in the wrong place. And what ends up happening is Johnson and his crew, as Ryan has been reporting, basically go searching for these guys, driving around the strip. Oh, you got this gun. I got that gun. We're going to make sure they don't mess with us kind of thing. Ah, God. I mean, it just – I know that I'm coming from it from maybe a biased perspective, but the information seems – very clear to me if you actually look at it. What I think happened is Jamia Harris died in that car and they pulled up on a police officer in front of Bryant Denny Stadium, and the police officer rightfully sees a dead woman and jumps into action and says, "What happened here?" Cedric Johnson gives his side of the story and boom, we're rolling. And we're just chasing this angle of the story, which look, it's a tragedy. Horrible. Oh, it's horrible. Oh.
Yeah, it's extremely sad.
But I just don't think that the story was followed all the way through to the end. I think the police officer, a woman who is dying in this car, how can we find out what's happened to her right now and button it up?
Yeah, yeah. I imagine there was a lot of, kind of frantic things happening just in and around that time. I mean, obviously, it was. I think the reports were like, what was it, like over a dozen gunshots fired in total or something like that. So, you know, a lot of chaos going on in and around the strip right then. So I can understand to an extent maybe the nitty-gritty details being glossed over a bit in real time. However, here we sit 2 years later, and it seems like a lot of things are coming to light now that are, to me, pretty damning pieces of evidence. I think the most illuminating things that, in my opinion, were the statement from Mr. Johnson previously that he had accidentally turned the headlights off in an attempt to turn the hazards off in the Jeep. However, as many people probably know, in a Jeep, the hazard button is located on the center of the dash and the headlights are located on the steering column, right to the left of the steering column there. So like no possible way you could accidentally do one for the other there. So very obviously an intentional decision to turn the headlights off in the car, which like one of the potential jurors that was struck from the, panel said, that would be exactly what I would do if I were performing a drive-by shooting. I'm not going to, I've never performed a drive-by shooting, never been around anyone that has, so I don't know. But, to me, that maybe seems like something you would do as well. And then also, what really was, I guess, frustrating to me was, seems like nobody wants to talk about the potential shotgun that was at the scene that they found evidence of. They found pellets on the ground to indicate that a shotgun had been fired, but just no one wanted to mention this. The other car that pulled up behind, I think it was Cedric Johnson's Jeep, which was behind Brandon Miller's car and Jaden Bradley's car, so on and so forth. The stolen red Impala that pulls up I can't remember the two people inside, one of which has never shown up to do anything.
Just falling off and probably died. Sorry.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. There are so many little things like that that it feels like just got glossed over, when in reality they are very major pieces of evidence that should have been taken into consideration. I agree with you. I do believe that I think maybe Michael Davis, because as Ryan reported,
he was didn't want to get back in. I think it was Jaden Bradley's car because he was worried about those guys, that Jeep. You know, I kept trying to find, where's that Jeep? So I think he was maybe not necessarily looking to hurt anybody, but trying to just kind of get eyes on it and figure out where these people were because he was worried. And then I think, yeah, like you said, I don't know. The reporting on the security footage that is shown depicts the Jeep Wrangler there, you know, circling around University back onto Gray Street, circling back up and then hitting a U-turn as soon as the crew all passes him, cutting his headlights. I don't know, you're not doing that if you're not doing something bad to me. I am not in that courtroom. I'm not making these decisions. But to me, that all of those things combined, all of the, you know, all of the little things like that add up to paint a picture where I don't believe that these two men should have been in jail this entire time, because I don't necessarily think they're guilty.
Yeah, I think what you have is, going back to the very start of the conversation, it's just a horrible tragedy. I've maintained, Mason, that, and this is controversial, but here we are later in the program. People can rake me over the coals if they want to, but I have maintained that if Miller does not return to the strip, it is my opinion that Darius Miles and Michael Davis would be dead.
I agree with that personally. And again, you can call me a homer if you want, but I, unlike many people who want to talk about this case, have actually spent the time to read all of the reporting on it. And now I feel like I'm pretty well versed in it. It just, the evidence does not paint the picture that we've been sold, or that that people who are not that connected have tried to tell you that the evidence has been presented to us does not paint that picture, that Darius Miles and that Michael Davis were these vicious killers out to kill this person and then accidentally killed his girlfriend. That's not what the evidence shows us.
So this is going to be huge, really, for Darius Miles. Michael Davis is currently on trial. Miles' trial will be later in the year, allegedly.
We hope.
Say.
Yeah, it'll probably be 3 years from now. Ridiculous.
Delay, and they have denied any bond hearing over the last 2 years. But I do think that if you end up getting a self-defense right here, then – pretty much going to slam dunk Darius Miles' case later in the year as the accomplice and as the gun owner.
Absolutely, I would think.
So just really – I mean, that's the really where I want to emphasize and leave this, that it is tragic ultimately. Sure. And that golly, be aware of your surroundings. Just makes me sad to consider all of it. And then you mentioned it right there, people not doing due diligence on the story, people just treating truth however they want to. Well, of course, Brandon Miller is a killer. Of course, yeah,
there's
went there with his Uzi AK-57 bazooka and tried to kill
people Yeah, people still act like Brandon Miller got off with a murder charge. It's like he had nothing to do with that. He very clearly testified this week. He was already en route to picking up Darius Miles when he receives the text message. Hey, I need my gun. Somebody, you know, whatever. I don't remember it's not slang that I use myself, but he was already on his way there. Did not know the gun was in the back seat. So he has no blame in this situation. I think the worst thing he did was, and it was on the dash cam footage, he told the guy that was sitting in the passenger seat when everything started. I think Pat story said that you can hear Brandon Miller yell, "You didn't see anything," which is like not great. But at the end of the moment, I can understand being a kid, you're probably going to say something like that.
Oh, yeah. Just incredibly challenging story, in my opinion, for all this. And like, you're too. To further, when this happens in 22, the DA, the Tuscaloosa people, you know, everybody in law enforcement is like, there's nothing we can charge Brandon with. I think they would have absolutely charged his tail if there was a charge that they could have stuck on him.
You think?
Yeah, I think. So that's where a lot of the, well, of course they're protecting the Tuscaloosa police, are protecting the basketball player Brandon Miller. Man, I think they would have happily said, "Oh, you too, buddy," on this charge if they could have had a charge.
Yeah, I think so too. again, I'm not in the courtroom. I don't know these people, but something tells me they're not all that upset that this has dragged out for 2.5 years and that those two men have had to sit in jail the entire time.
Oh, man. So I encourage you to read Ryan Phillips, Tuscaloosa Patch. I know Stephen Deathridge will be returning to action at Tuscaloosa Thread very soon, and they will be covering this trial until it ends. And I'm going to be paying very close attention to it because of my non-mainstream takes. I have stood out there on these takes with some people for 2 years now. I'm ready to be vindicated, or I'm ready to say, dang, I actually got it wrong. So I'm ready to see this thing come to a conclusion, Mason.
Yeah, I am too. Seems like I said, a lot of the evidence that has come to light here is painting a picture that maybe you will get your vindication.
All right, big dog. We are almost out of time for the day. I think that's about it. We are going to get into all things Bama with Mason Woods. Once a week, we chat about all kinds of things. We flip roles. Mason takes over the reins and leads us. And so he's going to lead us in an episode of All Things Bama here in just a minute. You can find that show on Apple Podcasts, Amazon, Spotify, same places that you find the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central. We had a lot of fun with you guys this week. I want to encourage you, look, I'm not going to be able to get to Parrish, Alabama tomorrow for New Era Wrestling. New Era Wrestling, they had a show in Hoover on last Saturday. They're going to have a show, Parrish, Alabama tomorrow. Bad Moon Rising. I wish I could be there. I am out of town. So you're going to have to go to that show for me. See who is the masked man for the Alpha, Alexander Lincoln, who attacked him in the last show. You will see that at Parrish, Alabama. Mason, it was cool seeing Rhino on AEW television this weekend.
Man, yeah, that was crazy. I did not realize. I didn't, you know, I don't. We got to see Rhino at the New Era event here in Tuscaloosa, and that was awesome. It was not someone that I was super familiar with prior to learning of the event in Tuscaloosa, but, you know, I watched a few matches here and there. The guy was awesome in his heyday. Like, the gore is sweet. Cool to see that he's still getting some opportunities. I like, you know, AEW is just kind of throwing things at the wall to see what sticks, it seems like, but I'm here for it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I just thought, oh, that was sweet. We saw him in person, yeah. Like, in a time.
Not like how mean the comments were being to him, though. The man is like 50. Cut him some slack.
The wrestling fans are great. Oh, you suck. You can't move anymore. Of course he can't move.
Yeah, like he's a middle-aged man. Cut him a little slack. It's pretty amazing that he's even out there. I will say, AEW gave him a serious spray tan. You know, when we saw him in Tuscaloosa, like he was tan, but not bright orange. He looked orange on that shot from AEW. They've been throwing those guys in the booth and zesting them up.
Tomorrow, Backlash in St. Louis for any wrestling fans as well. So there's going to be a lot of wrestling to get into over the weekend. New Era Wrestling, Parrish, Alabama, Bad Moon Rising on Saturday. And if you are not anywhere close, you can check out Backlash on Peacock. Randy Orton or John Cena. Of course, John Cena's going to win. Blech.
Yeah, it's going to be so lame, too, because, like, they can't, you know, end it this quick. But give Randy his hometown victory, you know?
That's exactly right. So we will be watching that this weekend. Mason and I are about to record All Things Bama. We're going to talk about the Diamond Sports, updating them. We're going to talk about recruiting. We're going to talk about LeBaron Filon and a lot more on All Things Bama. We will talk to you on Monday on the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central and BamaCentral.com.
Thanks for joining us on today's edition of the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central. Keep up with Joe on all his social media pages at JoeGaither6. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and be sure to read us daily at BamaCentral.com.